So in 1971, when Nixon closed the gold window in August 15, that was the main message, was that America's bankrupt. The question people have to ask themselves, is it possible to print wealth out of nothing or not? That's what the central banks are telling us. I mean, at the end of the day, the redistribution means you are stealing from the productive people. That's the geopolitical power shift that we are witnessing for 20 years already. You know, I mean, the gold is basically moving west to east. And now we have seen that the Chinese were announcing, you know, that the oil contracts, the future oil contracts, will be traded in renminbi.
How do you legally move a few dollars or millions of dollars in the U.S. banking system without it being tracked back to you? I've been showing people how to get financial privacy, financial anonymity, in fact, for 25 years. I get people out of debt situations, even during the middle of a levy or lawsuit. Then I create a legal fortress around the cash flow and assets that cannot be broken, even by the IRS. For some professionals and small business owners, I even have to use the dark web to handle large transactions invisibly. If you're still the personal signer for any bank account or not using the dark web for business, you're a sitting duck. Visit me at aceofcoins.com to learn the secrets to total financial privacy.
Well, okay, let's get into some economic issues, because I know that's this is your forte, but Switzerland, of course, but also global economic issues. And, you know, the dollar is the main currency in the world. I mean, it's the strongest, the dominant currency. And it's widely believed that the dollar needs to be reset. Do you think it does? And when will that occur?
Yeah, the crystal ball. At the end of the day, you know, when you look, I mean, of course, the dollar, you know, 65% of all the world's currency reserves are held in U.S. dollars on a global scale. So the dollar is the biggest problem. You know, I mean, when the Americans won the empire over from the Brits, with the Second World War, and then you had the Marshall Plan. So basically the whole, you know, Europe was destroyed. Japan was destroyed. The United States had the backbone. They had the industry. They never had a war over there, at least, you know, not a world war. And so they were able to, you know, to flood the market with U.S. dollars, because also in Bretton Woods, the conference in Bretton Woods basically was decided in 1944 that the U.S. dollar is as good as physical gold. And after the Second World War, America had 70% of all the gold reserves of the free world were in the United States. So that's why the U.S. dollar became the world currency reserve, because it was exchangeable into, you know, central banks were allowed to basically ask, instead of physical, you know, paper dollars, they were allowed to ask for physical gold. And so in 1971, when Nixon closed the gold window in August 15, that was the main message, was that America's bankrupt. And so since 1971, basically.
Although we went on to, not to interrupt you, but we created the petrodollar at that point, and oil was our backing, but keep going.
Absolutely. You know, so the gold backing basically was replaced. You had also, you know, the policy changed towards the Soviet Union in 1973. Then you had Kissinger going to China in 1971, 70, before they closed the gold window. So they opened up China for foreign investments. So they were able, you know, to spread the dollar, backed up by the oil with the Saudi and OPEC. That's the point. But since then, you know, I mean, when you look at the total, the funded liabilities of the United States, which are right now roughly, 21 trillion, that's only the funded liabilities. 98.5% have been created since 1971, since the Americans went off. So I mean, the whole world is based, I mean, Charles de Gaulle said, you know, that's the exorbitant privilege, that the Americans basically can print money out of thin air and just consume, send the dollars out. And so that has created a world economy based on credit on a global scale. And so, you know, even when you look at the total credit 2008, which stood at roughly at 160 trillion, now, 10 years later, we are standing at 243 trillion. So it's exponential. And, you know, what the people have to ask themselves, that's coming back to your question, is the dollar going to see a reset? When is it going to happen? I don't know when it will happen, but it will happen. That's not the issue, because if, you know, the question people have to ask themselves, is it possible to print wealth out of nothing or not? That's what the central banks are telling us. If that would be the case, so why don't the central banks hand over $1 million each of us on an annual, per year, and we can all live a happy life? You know, when you look at how much they, how many trillions they injected into the economy, I mean, it's just a joke. So that's why we see, you know, whenever they print money, it's a redistribution. And at the end of the day, I mean, at the end of the day, the redistribution means you are stealing from the productive people. You are stealing from the guys who are earning a fixed salary. And you basically hand it over to the financial institutions. You bail out the banks. You hand it over to the 1%, to the big multinational companies, which can lean money for almost zero. But the small and mid-cap companies, they have to pay much higher interest rates. So it's, you know, it's going out. I mean, this is, it's like a scissor. You know, it's, so one day it will crash, and we have cycles. So we have, for everything we have cycles. We have short-term debt cycles. We have long-term debt cycles, which we even know from the Bible. 50 years is a long-term debt cycle. We have generational cycles. And I think that, I mean, that stuff is all coming together 2020. I mean, look at 1971. Basically 50 years, that will be 2021. So, you know, that's, yeah. So, you know, we can see that the emerging markets basically are crashing already. So it's a question of what is going to happen in the future. You know, is dollar still, when the dollar is rising, most of the people who have credits in US dollars and foreign currencies, they have a big issue. They can't repay the debt. When interest rates are going up, then they have a problem to refinance that debt. And, so, and now that's basically why we have seen, you know, Turkey, Argentina, and also the other big crises in the past. It has always been the same mechanism. But now I think, yeah, everything has an end.
Well, there's a currency war, wouldn't you say? There's wars going on with currency and China and Russia, and they're trying to get out of the dollar. And they're hoarding gold and building up their gold reserves. Do you believe that? First of all, is there a currency war going on? I think I know your answer. And are they purposely trying to increase the value of the dollar to bankrupt countries and to gain more power?
Well, of course, I mean, there is a currency war ongoing for 10 years already. You know, we have seen basically central banks printing money in, you know, the Fed was talking to the ECB and the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank. I mean, they had all, it was orchestrated. So they basically all printed money, so debasing the currency. And now when we see China and we see Russia, of course, I mean, China most likely has roughly 20,000 tons of gold. And so, I mean, that's the geopolitical power shift that we are witnessing for 20 years already. You know, I mean, the gold is basically moving west to east. And now we have seen that the Chinese were announcing, you know, that the oil contracts, the future oil contracts will be traded in renminbi. I mean, in the past, you know, we had two guys trying to change, to go away from the petrodollar. There was Saddam Hussein in Iraq and Gaddafi in Libya. So they have been taken out. China is a bit different and a bit bigger, but they are doing the same now. And they also back it up by physical gold. And that's also the BRICS, you know, the BRICS trading hub, which is renminbi based and also backed up by physical gold. So these are clear signs that we are shifting away, you know, from the empire, so-called United States, that we go from a unipolar to a multipolar world.
Are you having trouble losing weight? It could be due to insulin levels that are out of balance. Learn what fat-flushing food helps balance your insulin levels. It's basically a hormone that determines how much fat your body stores. Over 240,000 women have successfully melted unwanted fat off their body fast, faster than you would think possible, keeping it off for good. Learn how so many people have melted fat so quickly. Click the link below.
Well, now, is it done organically, naturally, just based on power shifts? Or, like after World War II, it went from London or to England, to United States, now it's shifting to China. As Catherine Austin Fitz says, they made a decision, the global bankers, that United States is just a place we can't work anymore. Let's move our stuff to the east and have China be the hub and let's build it from there. Is that possible or is it more organic?
No, I mean, you know, I love history. So when you look into who financed Nazi Germany, who financed the Bolshevik Revolution, where there, I mean, Anthony Sutton or Professor Dr. Carol Quigley from Georgetown University, Tragedy and Hope. I mean, you have good sources where you see that, you know, the financing has been done by Western entities, big, you know, corporations, that they were always financing those cultural revolutions, I would call. And when it comes to China, of course, I mean, interestingly is, you know, you can go on the Yale University homepage, and you will find under the Yale Chronicles an article 1972 that on the front page says, yeah, Mao was a Yale man. So Mao was financed by Yale University. It was the editor of the Yale magazine in China. And at the same time, when you look into, you know, who has been the first ambassador of the United States to China when in 73, when they opened up, you know, the international relationships, it was George W. Bush, for example. You know, and when you look at the big multinational, the CITIC, you know, the Chinese investment fund, I mean, the first bank opening up a branch in China was Rockefeller, Chase. So I think, you know, it's like UK. I mean, UK, the city of London, you have, that's the old power base when it comes to old money. The Brits lost their empire. Then it has been shifted to the United States. And I think, you know, the bankers, they give a shit about the people. I mean, they will always make sure that in this system, you can go to up to a certain level. And then basically you try to shift and make sure that you are in the new power structure that you will make there, your business. And but I mean, I don't know if this, I mean, this is, we don't know what the future will bring, but there are certain, you know, history gives us at least, you know, some information which makes us think that it's not, everything is so easy. So it will be interesting to see what's going to happen in the future.
Well, and the scary part is Mao declared himself dictator for life. So, you know, people are should be scared of China knowing that. I mean, that's a pretty serious deal.
You know, when it comes to China, I mean, I have a lot of discussions with people. I mean, that's the historical part. And now also with Xi Jinping, I mean, that he became the president for lifetime right now, you have this One Belt, One Road initiative, which is basically going against the old doctrine of how to control Eurasia. I mean, the Brits had a big geostrategist guy that was Halford Mackinder. He always said, you know, the Brits are controlling the empire because they're controlling the seaways. And what they had to avoid was that Europe and Asia become one marketplace. So because Eurasia basically goes from Lisbon to Vladivostok. And that's why always they had to separate, you know, Europe from Asia. And I think this is something which the Chinese want to change. And even when you, so that's something which is going against the old doctrine, which has, you know, Alfred Mackinder has been copied by Zebrinsky with, you know, the empire, the one and single empire. I mean, that's the same doctrine. Literally. And then when you see how many free zones, not, you know, free zones, a lot of industrial zones in China are pretty independent. So you have a lot of competition. So the question is really, where is China going? Is it somehow a steered economy still, you know, in favor of the old power guys when it comes to banking and big multinational companies or not? I really don't know. I mean, that the future will show that. So I wouldn't be scared of the Chinese because we really don't know. And even when I talk to Chinese people who are close to liberty and some of them also linked with the Mises Institute, they truly believe, you know, that it's heading in the right direction.
Well, but let's look at a detail here. Peng, I used the wrong name earlier, he didn't like the Falun Gong. Right. And the Falun Gong practitioners were following it's this spiritual practice. It's a lifestyle. It's not a religion. And something like 60% of the people embrace this, but the ones that really followed it, strongly, they persecuted them. And now they're being used for human trafficking and organ trafficking. And there's a lot of, research and very, award winning, journalists and journalism in that area with hard facts in that area. And he was the reason, when I looked into that, he was the reason why they were persecuted. And essentially, everybody's afraid to even follow that Falun Gong principles anymore. That's the guy that declared himself emperor for life or dictator for life. Those kinds of signals are major red flags.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is, I haven't done the research when it comes to that. I mean, there is a lot of evil stuff going on because it's, you know, we are living in a centralized system and, you know, power corrupts absolutely. And at the same time, you know, it tracks a lot of sociopaths. And so that's why you have, you know, those stuff popping up. But I think it's not just one country. It's really within those structures. And, you know, that these sociopaths, I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah, they're supplying the world. I mean, and I'm coming from the United States, and we're no Boy Scout, Girl Scout club over here. So, I mean, I get that. But it's, you know, it's some red flags.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, even, you know, I always, you know, if I'm always, you know, we don't know exactly what is happening. I mean, we can, that's why I love history. You know, I love history just to see some trends. Of course, at the end of the day, I have to believe my sources. I have to read a lot of books. And that's what I've done the last 20 years, basically. So that gives you, so you can make up your own mind, but you always need, no one knows the truth.
Because there's no transparency,
absolutely.
Right? And so
absolutely.
History, if you can get to the true history,
right.
You're saying is the only time that you really know?
I mean, I like, you know, I mean, something which would happened over the, you know, over the last few hundred years, I mean, you find a lot of great books, great sources. And so that gives you at least, you know, an indication. And I also believe in the principles of liberty. So, you know, for me, history and the principles of liberty gives me a kind of orientation, how I, you know, how I do business with how I look at the world. And, but I'm always hesitant because even I mean, I don't claim that I know the truth. And when it comes to that kind of stuff, I think, you know, we look at everything from a collective point of view. You know, we don't see the individual any longer. And even there, I mean, in China, I think, you know, maybe there are more people around which have more, in a sense, to do with capitalism, you know, than, you know, with communism. So there is a big dispute. And yeah, so, you know, these kind of topics, the red flag, and then basically just to say, okay, that's a red flag. And it's very dangerous. We should not deal with these guys. I think that's, you know, that's, yeah, it's kind of this divide and conquer strategy. So we should always be hesitant. We can follow, you know, we can follow up. We can do the research and, we can debate. And at the end of the day, that's why we need free speech. You know, that's why we really need free speech, because that's the only way how people can enlighten themselves. When we are free to debate, free to talk, whatever we think, whatever we believe in, And then the better ideas, and I think, are going to prevail. But right now, of course, because there is so much confusion, you know, we have fake news, we have propaganda going on, we have this divide and conquer strategy, we have those, the kind, you know, the oppressed versus the oppressor has been exchanged or replaced by, you know, the LGBT versus the heterosexual, the whites versus the blacks, the Muslims versus, so they want to divide and conquer us. That's the oldest strategy. And I just, yeah, let's look into the stuff which basically where we can claim, where we can see, okay, this is a lot of sources are talking about it, different books, you know, or experiences or good talks, and all the new stuff which is going on. Sometimes it's so hard to see, you know, what is really behind it, or is it just, you know, propaganda trying to confuse us even more. So that's why I'm always a bit hesitant of, you know, and I don't see it just in white and black, because there is much, like there is not one opinion that is the only truth. There are, you know, different opinions can be absolutely true, because you can look at this, at a certain topic from all different kinds of angles. And at the end of the day, I see a completely different story than my wife, for example. So that's why we also have to argue quite often. So, yeah.
Well, getting rid of the Federal Reserve is something that many people in our country want to do, right? And one of the questions that I have, and someone said you would be a great person to answer this, is if we overnight nationalize the Federal Reserve, which we could do, and it, you know, the problem is it's already in place. It's a whole banking structure. So if we just got rid of it and didn't replace it with something else, it would create many problems. But we could nationalize it and it already be in place. Would we have to replace the dollar at the exact same time, or could we just simply nationalize it and have a fiat currency in place as it is, and then move to replace or reset the dollar?
You know, I think a nationalization is most likely not going to work anyway. So, you know, I don't see anything good coming from the top. I also believe that governments should not have, they should not be responsible for the monetary system, because you can look back into history, the governments never provided a good monetary system. So we need private money, and the governments need to stay out, and the people, that's all because why do we have money and how did money came into existence?
Well, our constitution says that our Congress is the only one that can create money. So for us, we have to change our constitution first, which is a much bigger hurdle than to just get rid of the Fed.
Right. I mean, listen, look at Switzerland. You know, our Swiss National Bank, basically it's owned by the government. It's owned by different states. I think, you know, it's at least 80 or 90%. Then you have a few guys who own a share in it, maybe 3 or 4%. But it's basically, it's a government entity. So it comes close to what Karl Marx had in his Ten Commandments of Communism, that the money, you know, the money supply, the money in the hands of a central government owned central bank. So this is a collectivistic idea. And if the government has the power, or even, you know, okay, in the States, it's a bit different because you have those private banks owning the shares in the Federal Reserve System. So it's a private entity. So that's even worse at the end of the day. But even if you would nationalize it, it would not change anything.
Well, no, right now we have private people and bankers taking the money away from the country and investing it elsewhere. That's not good for the people. At least if you nationalize it, that interest and those fees would stay in the country.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a step better. We can argue all day long whether that's good anyways, but what we got now, where we just got a bunch of, where we're enriching this small group of people who are Luciferians and whatever they are, and using it against us, is total ludicrous.
You know, I mean, look at the example of the Swiss National Bank. You know, they always had a balance sheet of 50 billions. Until 2006, I think, still 50 billions. We went off the gold standard in 2000. And today we are standing at 830 billion. Sorry. So they basically 16 times they increased the balance sheet. Everything is under control of the central bank. It's basically owned by the states, but it's, of course, fully independent, what they always claim. But It's as bad as the others, because it's really, they're printing money, so they're giving money to others, and they basically steal it from somewhere. That's always what's happening when you print money.
But do you think you're controlled, though? Are you now controlled by everybody else? Is that the problem? You're not an independent banking system like you thought you were? I mean, do you think you're not being able to operate independently like you had been in the past?
Well,
The politicians in the pocket of all these other people is what I'm asking.
You know, the destruction of the monetary system basically is the easiest way to destroy a society. I mean, that's also an old wording. And that's why, you know, I don't know, we will not get out of this system. I don't expect anything good from the top, you know, from the deputy of God on earth. So I think people should think about what would be, you know, what is it a better solution to have another central bank, but not owned by private banks, but owned by a government entity? I don't think that's a reasonable solution. So they should think, okay, can I be my own central bank? And money basically used to be always a property title. You know, I mean, that's why we need money, because we are still trading goods and services, but real goods and real services. But instead that the butcher, you know, had to pay with meat and the baker had to pay with bread, they tried to find the most liquid meat of exchange. And that's how gold and silver, for example, came into existence. And that's also how paper money came into existence, because it always used to be a property title on a certain amount of gold or silver in the past. And now it's just an IOU or the debt security. And a few people basically can decide in a private or in a nationalized system to print out of nothing and to decide who is going to receive it, at what interest rates, which political groups, whatever. So I think that's the big mistake of our current monetary system.
So I think we're both in agreement that a decentralized money system, something like a cryptocurrency, based on everything I've heard you say in the past, would be ultimately the best. But I want to hear your opinion on this. Many believe that we're moving to a crypto society. However, the shift will end up just hurting us in the long run, because we will be a cryptocurrency society controlled by the central bankers anyways, and it will be hell on earth because they're going to be controlling everything.
I mean, you know, the crypto... First of all, you know, for me, I mean, Bitcoin is something. Bitcoin is really, it's pure digital. It's not backed up by nothing. And, people, you know, value is absolutely subjective. So there are, you know, few nerds or people who grew up with the internet, the young guys, that they will believe that Bitcoin is money. I think some people will come to that conclusion, and it can become money, but it's not for the majority. So blockchain for me is basically a property title. So we are going to digitalize real assets, real services into the blockchain. And that is going to create, that's basically what Friedrich August von Hayek called the denationalization of money. So, and that's now the trade-off.
Let me just clarify. So basically, if we take every asset we have, because money is just collateral based on something, right? So if you put every asset you have into a blockchain, that becomes money. We're just changing goods and services.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, in the blockchain, I mean, the way I look, I'm thinking about, you know, creating a gold-backed crypto. But that means, you know, that every coin is fully backed by a gram of gold, for example. We are working on stuff like this. But it's linked with a physical asset at the end of the day. And it's a property title that people can trade over the internet. It will be stored here in Switzerland or in Liechtenstein. And if the people want to redeem, then they will have the possibility in the future to do that. The problem, you know, so crypto at the end of the day, that brings it back to this denationalization of money, because it's peer to peer. So the trade-off is with crypto is when it comes to everything is fully transparent in the blockchain, you know, in that network, basically governments can trace, and based on that, they can also tax. So, you know, taxation will become easier. Everything is transparent, but not only us, but also the government and those guys will be transparent. It's in the blockchain. You cannot change it. So that's definitely the bad aspect of it. But the positive aspect of it is that they give up the money supply. They give up the monetary system, because people will, you know, if I'm in the gold business, I will hold some of my money in physical gold, and I'm going to trade it through the blockchain peer to peer with others. And others who are in the steel business, they might decide that steel is money. And, you know, the other guys who are grain in the grain business, whatever.
Everything is money. It's because right now everything is anyways, because it's collateral for money that has value.
As I said, you know, money at the end of the day used to be always a property title. And because in a barter economy or in the ancient, you know, in the past where we didn't have the money of the internet, because the internet is really... you know, for me, I mean, even there, you have people saying, yeah, the internet will allow the government to survey much, much more and to control us much more. That's true. But the trade-off was that they basically lost the information monopoly. You know, they cannot control. I mean, in the past, you had the national radio stations, the media, which is owned by six companies in the United States, for example. So, and now with the internet, that's why they come up with censorization and, you know, hate speech and all that crap, basically, because they realize that they lose control. And, you know, if you cannot steer the people with propaganda and they find other information and make up their own mind and can do their own research, that's weakening the centralized structures. And I think that's for me, you know, when I look at the internet, for me, that's the most beautiful part. So even the bad aspects of the internet have been compensated much more by the positive aspects. And I think that is going to happen with blockchain and cryptos in the future.
Well, that's a great analogy, because You're just like you decentralize information. They can track everything now, which is okay. By decentralizing information with the internet, now they can track everything you're doing. Same thing, you're decentralizing money. They no longer can control the money, but they now they can see every flipping thing that you're doing. So that's a trade-off. So how do we, I mean, that's scary, though. I mean, I mean,
that's where we are. I mean, but at the end, you know, just imagine, I mean, printing money, creating, you know, inflating the money supply. That's a hidden tax. Most of the people don't understand what's happening when the government injects liquidity and what where inflation is coming from. It's basically always because of the money supply. And this world can only be ruled by a centralized entity if they control the money supply and if they control what is money. So, I mean, they're losing that. And now imagine, of course, everything becomes transparent, but now they have to tax the people. You know, and when they tax the people and the people see that and they are not happy with it, then you're going to see, you know, riots, whatever. It's much harder, you know, for centralized institutions. And when you look at the blockchain and the whole idea behind it, I mean, it's really decentralization. It's peer to peer. So it means in the future, we're going to have decentralized communication. So, you know, people will own their own information and not Facebook and Google and centralized platforms. So we're going to have decentralized law. You know, you can have your smart contracts, and you basically in that contract it will be agreed. Okay, if you deliver the bananas that you have promised and they're in that good shape, then I'm going to pay for it. The third one is, you know, means decentralized production, and of course a decentralized financial system.
It'll be really interesting because it's a lot of paradigm shifts, and it's a loss of control for people, and they're going to try to figure out how to replace that control somehow. I personally do not see the powers that be that control literally our world right now will easily let that control go. I mean, I think you have to be really naive to think that that's going to happen in any kind of simple way.
You know, I mean, Krugman said back in 1999 that the invention of the internet will not have a bigger impact by 2005 than the invention of the fax machine. You know? So, yeah, and the internet came basically was a military invention. You know, it came from the military ARPANET, and blockchain and Bitcoin is also coming from the NSA. I mean, the hashtag that they used. So at the end of the day, what you always see, you know, there are always two sides of a coin. And at the end of the day, it's up to the people. If they understand what it's all about, look at the internet. I mean, I can browse today completely secure if I want to. I know that when I put something on Facebook or whatever, I know that everyone is monitoring it, that it will remain there. So people need to be sensibilized what they are doing when they use the internet. And they are certain, you know, if the people think about it, then they can also protect them in a way. But on the other side, as I said, you know, I mean, the internet for me is the Gutenberg press. It's really, you know, it's part of the enlightenment, which we are seeing right now with Brexit, and we had Trump, and we say fake news, and we see those secession movements, and we hear about libertarianism, or we hear about, you know, Mises or whatever. I mean, so it's great. You know, never Kissinger bombed Cambodia for 1.5 years. It was not a single it was one small article once in the newspaper, but most of the people in the United States, they had no clue that they dropped more bombs on Cambodia than on Germany during the Second World War. So, and now, of course, today, you know, this cannot happen. At the same time, you can abuse the internet to create the fake war, you know? So it's much harder for the people, but at the same time, they have more information. They can do their own research. If they want to dig for the truth, there is, you know, they have everything, all the wisdom at their fingerprint, but they have to decide for themselves what they want to believe in. And if they really want to find out more, then they have to do their own research.
It'll be really fascinating to just watch how this whole thing unfolds, because like you said, you don't know, because you don't know what's really going on behind the scenes. It's right. Not transparent. So we don't really know. All we can really do is really look at what the facts are telling us.
Correct. And embrace, you know, I also see, as I said, you know, there is always positive and negative aspects. I think at the end of the day, it's really up to us how we look at it, what we will make out of it. But I think overall, when I see, you know, the developments over the last 20 years when it comes to internet and now the internet money, I see much more positive aspects than negative aspects overall.
Well, how can people reach you? What do you do to make money? Tell us that. Give us your pitch too, and then how they can reach you.
So, I mean, no, I built up a gold company in the past, and basically I resigned last year. So I became self-sustainable. So the main, what I'm doing mostly is basically I advise clients from all over the world if they want to buy physical gold and also how to store it. I work with a selected partners here in Switzerland, two in Switzerland, and one is in Liechtenstein. But so my people, they always saw gold as a hedge against the dollar. They see it as a hedge against all the risks linked with our current system. So as their monetary insurance, basically, or as their pension fund. So they have a long-term time horizon, and they understand history, they understand the monetary system. And, you know, gold has been money for 5,000 years. Now it's basically demonized for 50 years. You know, I believe in the long-term history. And when I see the geopolitical power shift with gold, so I truly believe, you know, when you look into the East, I mean, why do they buy the gold? Why do the central banks buy, you bring back their gold? It's because they know it's money. So I advise clients from retail up to high net worth individual to institutional clients. So that's basically my main business. And right now I'm also looking into the crypto valley and also Liechtenstein, talking to a few cryptocurrencies market leaders who, you know, building up trading platforms and so on. So I have certain ideas when it comes to that, to basically to offer, you know, to be part, to see what's going on in the future. I want to deal with the right people. I want to deal with people who share the same values, who believe in liberty and freedom, and, you know, in self-responsibility and in a sound society, because, you know, sound money, you need sound money for a sound society. If you have fake money, then you have a corrupted society. And so I'm writing about geopolitics, I'm writing about history. That's how I get in touch with the people. And so they can always go on my webpage. It's claudiograss.ch. And so I'm publishing from time to time. And then they can get in touch if they are ever interested in, you know, having a discussion how to protect themselves when it comes to, you know, physical precious metals, for example.
Well, do you consult? So you consult people on where to buy and how to buy, and also cryptocurrencies and kind of where to put their money in both of those markets?
Cryptocurrencies not. I mean, you know, I'm looking into right now how we can digitalize, for example, physical gold, how to put it in the blockchain, so that, because I had clients that were saying, yeah, but, you know, when the banking system goes down, or when I'm not able to travel, you know, from the States to Switzerland or whatever, or from Italy or wherever, how do I get access to my gold, for example? And so I thought, okay, the crypto and the blockchain business basically allows an additional trading platform for the future, because you cannot block the internet forever, and hackers will always find a roundabout to, you know, to free the internet if they have to. And so I'm looking into certain cryptocurrencies to learn more, to meet the right people, and to see what's going on there, and also to see if there are opportunities. But I'm not invested in cryptos at the moment, but I look into different companies which are building up new technologies, new services, which are linked with blockchain and crypto.
Now, do you also help people set up international accounts with their gold or silver?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, because in a lot of ways you want to diversify where you're storing your... It's not... If you're in the United States, you probably just don't want to keep it in the United States. Is that accurate?
I mean, you always had, you know, I mean, there were four guys in the history who confiscated gold in the last 100 years. One was Roosevelt in 1933. The other one was Mussolini in Italy, Hitler in Germany, and Stalin in the Soviet Union. So I, you know, Switzerland is a great place because, okay, the banks are everywhere the same. You know, property rights are only of temporary nature in the banking system. If you're dealing with a private bank who basically is not, in the fractional reserve system, and they don't use, they use collateral, but they are backed up. That's a different story. But you know, the problem when it comes to gold, then you really need the strongest jurisdiction in terms of private property rights. And Switzerland is, you know, I mean, the U.S. government, they can decide to go to war, so they can also decide, you know, independently of the people, even independently of the Congress. But so they can also decide in the future if they want to confiscate gold, if they want to. And Switzerland, basically, that will not be possible because our politicians don't have that much power. And I'm also looking into Liechtenstein, which has a monarchy, which is one of the oldest one. It's also kind of it's the same system as in Switzerland, but the guy has a veto power. But he's, for example, a big classic liberal. He believes in secession. He believes in a decentralized state. He believes, he sees the state as a service organization. And he also is a big fan of physical gold and silver and classic liberalism. So that's a good basis to start with as well. And so, as I said, everything must be, you know, I always play after the games or play by the games. I tell my people, I don't want to have people hiding, trying to hide something, because everything is traceable. You know? So you need to have the right motivation why you want to go into physical gold, why you see it as your insurance, and then it's possible to open up an account, fully legal, fully compliant. But at the same time, you can have much more privacy and the property rights are stronger than in the banking system.
But if the United States decided they want to compensate gold and they decide that's ours too, even if it's in Switzerland, would they be able to do that?
I mean, you know, based on Swiss law, I mean, then they would have to prove that that the Americans did something wrong. And at the same time, I mean, you know, I think a confiscation will only occur when the system is really going down the drain. And how long the state is going to remain in power. Imagine, you know, if you have, you need a few days, no food supply, a big crisis, and you look at the constant divide and conquer strategy. I mean, people are going to shoot each other. And so I don't know how, you know, how strong and how this apparatus will work in a real crisis and what will come out of it. But of course, you know, I mean, the Americans could bomb Switzerland if they want to, if we don't agree or comply with them. So you never have 100%. But I think, you know, it makes sense to think about the future, to come up with the own risk assessment. I truly believe it makes sense to help certain wealth outside of the jurisdictions you live in. I think it's really adding an additional layer of security. And but of course, no one can give you a guarantee, but we can only prepare for the worst. And I basically, I'm always a guy that try to think ahead. And, you know, if I see something is changing in Switzerland, I try to find a plan B so that that there will be, you know, other solutions possible.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sticking around. Will you stick around for another question for my patrons?
Sure. Pleasure. Thank you very much.